Welcome to the Global Heart Podcast, the podcast that bridges the gap between evidence and implementation for people with cardiovascular disease across the world. I'm your host, Pablo Perel, Senior Science Advisor of the World Heart Federation. Together with lead authors, we highlight the latest global cardiovascular research that makes a difference where it's needed the most. For this third episode, we have a special edition of the Global Heart Podcast as I'm recording from the World Heart Federation Summit in Geneva, where we meet annually with our members. Today, we'll be focusing on air pollution and cardiovascular disease, which is also the focus of the World Heart Report 2024. We will be talking later on this episode with Dorairag Prabhakar, Executive Director of the Center for Chronic Disease Control in India, to discuss a recent paper on the association between air pollution and lipid levels in India. But first, I'm delighted to be speaking with Mark Miller, reader in air pollution and health from University of Edinburgh, who is one of the main authors of the World Heart Report 2024 on air pollution and CVD. Thanks, Mark, for joining the Global Heart Podcast, and I hope you're enjoying Geneva and the summit.
As always, it's a fantastic event and a pleasure to be here.
So moving to the report, I'm sure you are being very busy answering a lot of questions about the report we are launching. Why a report on air pollution and CVD? Until recently, this was not a main topic for the cardiovascular community. Why is it now?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it is something that we really don't have a good appreciation of. And that's perhaps surprising because actually, if you look back at some of the science, even back as far as 1990, we were starting to see the links between air pollution and cardiovascular disease. There were studies in America where they looked at levels of particles in the air, and they started to find that when those particles were higher, there was more hospital admissions for respiratory disease, but also cardiovascular disease, and particularly cardiovascular deaths. So that was way back in the 1990s, but since that time, the issue has only ever grown. And I think it really has been underappreciated the last few decades, but this is starting to change now. The awareness has started to become better, our understanding of the science has become better, and with our understanding of the science, people are actually believing the results. And the figures that we will talk about in the report, they are staggering and people need to pay attention to them.
Indeed, it's changing. And so let's move to that. I mean, what are the main findings of this report? I know you cover many issues, but can you highlight some of the main findings?
Absolutely. So as you say, the report was really an overview of the various topics and factors we need to consider when thinking about air pollution and cardiovascular disease. But if I focus on the data, and this is really the headline statistics, what we did was we took World Health Organization data, some of the most robust and reliable data, from 2019. And we chose that because that's robust data that looks at stationary monitoring networks of air pollution, and they can also link it to disease. And we specifically sort of honed in on cardiovascular diseases. So the headline figures were that the air pollutant that we're most concerned about, that's particulate matter 2.5, so PM2.5. So this single air pollutant is linked to in the region of 1,900,000 premature deaths from heart disease and 900,000 deaths from stroke. So these are large numbers. These are global figures, but these are occurring every year. Millions of deaths from cardiovascular disease from just one air pollutant.
You will find the link at the bottom of this podcast. You can read it in detail. But one thing that caught my attention is the difference according to regions and countries, particularly by income level. Can you expand a little bit on that? What's the impact of air pollution according to countries and regions?
Certainly. And I think that's really important as well. So if we're just talking about, for example, the levels of air pollution, so the levels of PM2.5, these have been slowly decreasing, but I really want to emphasize the word slowly. So over the last decade, there has been about a 1% reduction in the levels of this air pollutant. So despite all the advances and awareness, we're still making very slow progress on that. But this is usually variable depending where you are in the world. And the levels of air pollution differ hugely. So we do have situations where we have lower middle-income countries, particularly in the Eastern Mediterranean and Southeast Asia, which have staggering levels of air pollution, almost 10 times the World Health Organization guideline levels. And the rates are also different as well. So we have big improvements in Europe and the Americas as well, but many other countries are increasing. And for example, if we take Africa as a continent as well, more than, I think, 60% of the countries in Africa have increasing levels of this air pollution. And with the increasing levels comes more disease, more cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that caught my attention, the important burden that contribute in lower middle income countries. And also interesting in the report, you talk about policies as well, and maybe these are the places that they have less policies in place. But you talk about the data that you use, but I'm sure you face some methodological challenges and lack of data. Can you share with us which were the main challenges you faced when preparing the report?
Well, the data is always an issue. And, you know, we had various decisions to make. And some of the big sources of data are places like the Global Burden of Disease data, the World Health Organization data. And there's various pros and cons of all of them. We tended to focus in on the World Health Organization data purely because we thought that this reflected more of the measurement of air pollutants from ground monitors. Now, ultimately, there was a lack of ground monitors, and we need to fill in the gaps, and we do this with satellite measures. And that tends to be what's used for global levels. But the more ground monitoring data you get, the more accurate it is in terms of the air pollutant on the ground, which is what people are exposed to. So that was probably our main reason for choosing the World Health Organization, in addition to being very reliable data, and it has the attributable disease we can link to it as well.
Mark, going to the comment on monitoring, you said that there is some gaps in terms of data. Can you tell us a little bit more about which are the largest gaps and in terms of monitoring data on the ground on air pollution?
Yes, certainly. And that's a really good point, Pablo. I mean, we need to start moving away from thinking of air pollution as just one thing. Air pollution is a huge cocktail of hundreds of thousands of different chemicals, and we tend to group them together. So I've been referring to particulate matter, and even within that, that is hugely variable. So it comes from lots of different sources. It can have a different chemical composition. It can have different sizes. That's not just the science. That's important to the health as well, because all those things affect how harmful these particles are. So the report largely focuses on PM2.5. Now, much of PM2.5 can come from a range of different sources. It can come from natural sources like desert dust. But the ones we're really concerned on are the ones that are man-made. So these are the sources like industry, fossil fuel burning, transportation. Those are the ones that are probably most likely to be linked to health effects. And there's real gaps in the data for the monitoring. So just using my own country as an example. So I live in Edinburgh in Scotland, which is the capital city of that. And I've mentioned that PM2.5 is the most important air pollutant we can measure for health studies. Well, there's in the region about 5 different monitors in our capital city. So that's really few monitors within one big city with a, you know, a reasonably big population as well. And this needs to be improved. It's one of the recommendations we suggest. We need more monitoring, and that produces the greater accuracy in the modelling as well, so we can fill in the gaps. Some of the real issues are in countries which have even less monitoring, though. So I will turn to Africa once again. And in Africa, there is very few monitors, not just a PM2.5, but any air pollutant. There's a few clusters around Western Africa, Southern Africa, but the middle of Africa is a real problem. So we're a lot less certain about the levels of air pollution in that region. And of course, then we're a lot less certain about the health effects in that region.
Oh, very interesting, Mark. I mean, one thing linking to your answer that I wanted to ask you is about future research. And I know this is your work, so I'm sure you have lots of potential. But what would you say that are the most important and urgent research questions in terms of air pollution and cardiovascular disease from a global perspective?
Oh, the temptation just to say which grants I have in just now and it needs to be funded, but I won't do that. I think there are so many things I could fix on. And I think one of the frustrations in this field is the assumption that air pollution is improving. And I mentioned previously, it is improving, but it's sporadic. It varies with country and it's small improvements. But even if we look in developed countries, the improvements are slowing down. Now we have made huge gains over the last 30 years as we implement policies, and that's good, but those improvements are slowing down. But the air pollution mixture is also changing as well. So while we're getting rid of some of the older air pollutants, so a great example would be lead that we removed from petrol. For example, many countries have reduced the use of coal, and that gets rid of sulfur dioxide, which is great. Those levels have fallen a lot. But the worry is that we're also, at the same time, increasing other air pollutants. So, for example, as we modernize engines, we're reducing what comes out in the exhaust, which is great. But we have to worry that some of the particles that come out of the exhaust are even smaller. If they're smaller, they're more likely to get from the lung into the blood and carry these chemicals around the body. And there's lots more newer air pollutants that are emerging. So, microplastics are being found in the air. As we move to electrification of vehicles, maybe we're less concerned about the exhaust, but there is particles that come off the brakes and the tyres. Those may actually increase because electric vehicles are heavier. We've made great strides in some air pollutants, but not others. So ammonia from farming is a major concern. Most countries really haven't made any improvements at all. And ammonia changes in our atmosphere. It changes from a gas to particles. And even in cities, we can have up to 20% of the particles in cities due to agriculture. So we need to factor this in. We need to factor this into policy. Should we not just be targeting transport? Should we be looking at agriculture? Should we be looking at the way we eat?
You were talking about what we should be recommending. And I want to finish with that. The report highlights many recommendations, but if you can focus on a few policy recommendations that you think are priority.
Absolutely. So we make primary and secondary recommendations, and there were five primary recommendations. I'll mention the first two in detail, and then I'll try to group the other two together. So the first two are really big governmental policies. So we do need to be sort of targeting the World Health Organization guidelines. So these were updated in 2021, and they were made much more stringent. So the levels of air pollutants were halved. Now, these are going to be difficult for people to meet. Even in developed countries and clean countries, we're going to struggle to meet. Based on 2019 data, not a single country meets those standards. This will hopefully improve over time, but there will be countries that find it harder to address than others. But this ambition is important. These levels are based on health. They're based on where we see the health effects, not based on the economic difficulties and the practicalities. This is a targeting health. So if we want to make the maximum health gains, we need to be targeting those levels. So we encourage governments to make a roadmap to meet those challenges. The other thing we'd like to do is sort of support the movement away from fossil fuels. So support fossil fuel non-proliferation treaties. And that's good because, again, we're starting to look a little bit in more detail, you know, not air pollution just as one thing, but certain air pollutants. And the current evidence suggests, though fossil fuels are the sources of the worst air pollution, so if we tackle those, we'll hopefully see the greatest health benefits. And there's benefits for climate change as well. And then some of the further recommendations are really just to improve awareness, to improve public awareness, policymaker awareness, particularly of the cardiovascular effects of air pollution. You know, this is what the staggering numbers we're talking about. To improve medical education, to see air pollution and health in there in different sectors, to translate improve funding for new research. And that research is essential that we look at the cardiovascular effects.
Thank you, Mark. And we always like to finish our interviews with a final question to all our guests about this podcast focus on global cardiovascular research. What do you understand by that? And if you can say in one sentence or two sentences, what's your understanding of global cardiovascular research?
I don't think I've ever answered the question in two sentences before. I think essentially air pollution is a global issue. We need the research because the research determines the health, which determines the policies. It's what makes the change. And air pollution is a global issue. No one is safe from air pollution, no matter how well your country is doing. So let's have that global research and let's try and see the cardiovascular benefits.
Interesting. And I think it's a fascinating discussion we're having about air pollution and cardiovascular health. And our listeners can find the link to the 2024 WHF report and read in detail the fascinating report. And it has been a pleasure talking to you in this Global Heart podcast today. I hope you enjoy the rest of this summit, and thank you very much for being with us.
Many thanks.
You are listening to the Global Heart Podcast. I'm your host, Pablo Perel. We are here in Geneva at the World Heart Summit, and in this special episode of the podcast, we are focusing on air pollution. We now have the pleasure to be talking with Dorares Prabhakar, who is Executive Director of the Center for Chronic Disease Control in India. He's one of the leading researchers on global cardiovascular health research across many areas, including air pollution. And we invited him today to talk about a recent interesting paper that he published in Environmental Health, which is entitled Longitudinal Association Between Ambient PM2.5 Exposure and Lipid Levels in Two Indian Cities. Welcome, Prabhakar. Very happy to have you in the podcast, and I hope you're enjoying Geneva and the summit.
Thank you, Pablo. Likewise, it's a great pleasure to be in this beautiful city of Geneva at this time.
So to start, Prabhakar, with all the challenges you're facing in India regarding cardiovascular disease, why focusing on air pollution?
That's a very good question. One might say that, you know, premature mortality due to cardiovascular disease and premature cardiovascular disease is very high amongst Indians. And it has been argued that the traditional risk factors have to be controlled, be it smoking, hypertension, or diabetes, and many studies have shown that. But there are specific reasons why we are studying air pollution. As we all know, over the last 10 years, air pollution has increased considerably in many parts of the world, particularly in India. Second, there's lots of evidence now linking air pollution to cardiovascular disease, particularly from high-income countries. Thirdly, the conventional risk factors do not explain the excess risk completely because the thresholds at which they're operating in Indians, it's much lower than the high-income country or the Western population. And therefore, because of all these reasons, we need to study air pollution as a risk factor for cardiovascular diseases amongst Indians.
What was the specific research question that you were addressing in this paper?
So we were asking a very simple question. Is air pollution related to adverse lipid levels, that is high cholesterol, high triglycerides, high LDL cholesterol, and low HDL cholesterol?
And can you share with us what was the key methodological approach to conduct this study?
So there are two things that were required. So we are looking at a longitudinal data from a cohort that we established in 2009-2010 from Delhi and Chennai, two large cities, representative population, very well phenotyped, multiple data points available, and annual follow-up for mortality and hospitalization, and biannual follow-up of for measurement of blood pressure, blood levels of various biological variables, and several others. So that's one. And second is measuring air pollution. Measuring air pollution is much more complex than what we think. Suppose we were simply to relate blood pressure to future cardiovascular disease, it's very easy because you can measure the blood pressure and attribute it to that given individual. Now, how do we attribute air pollution level to a given individual? There are two ways of doing it. One, we give them a measuring equipment, measure PM2.5 in that individual, which is going to be very cumbersome, not possible. So we have to model and assign PM2.5 values to that person. So how do we do that? There are multiple ways of obtaining PM2.5 levels. The first is getting data from the monitors that are present within the city of Delhi and Chennai. Indeed, for example, in Delhi, there are 25 monitoring stations which use us PM2.5 or PM10 values, and we model PM2.5 from PM10. The second is every day a satellite goes around the city of Delhi and Chennai. From that, we obtain what is called as aerosol optical depth, from which we can calculate PM2.5 levels. The third is all polluting industries in and around the city of Delhi and Chennai have what is called as emission inventories. And from that, we can obtain the PM2.5 levels. Having obtained that, PM2.5 is not very static. It's very dynamic. It's influenced by the temperature. In hot temperatures, it goes up. In cold temperature, it tends to remain at the bottom and therefore produce high levels of pollution. Third, there are seasonal things like burning of crops. And so we require to adjust for that. The fourth is road networks, how close to the roads people are living. Then we need to look at the metro network. We need to look at land use, vegetation index, and several other factors, meteorological variables, which can influence. So what we did was from 2010 to 2016, a total of 1,557 days, we obtained PM2.5 levels for every day of those 7 years. And this we obtained by what we call as machine learning models. We use several machine learning models, largely four machine learning models. One is called neural networks, random forest, the extreme gradient boosting, and then average them and put into another model called ensemble model. And there is an established model called GeoSchem model, which has been developed by Harvard University. And we use that model to obtain PM2.5 levels on every day for those 1,557 days. Now, we validated this and found that it had almost 96% accuracy. So we clearly could assign to each of those individuals. Having assigned PM2.5 levels and having measured, say, lipid levels on a particular day, we can go back in time and say, okay, 1 week back, this was the PM2.5 level. 1 month back, or an average of 1 month, this was the PM2.5 level, or 6 months and 1 year. And then we could look at the relationship between PM2.5 levels and the measured lipid levels. That's the methodology.
It's amazing and it's interesting. As an epidemiologist, I mean, we think that measuring exposure was complicated, but this is a different level. No, it's very complicated, but it's amazing the work you've done and how challenging. And that might explain also the limited research that we have in this topic, particularly in low and income countries. But going to the findings, so what were the most important findings? Can you summarize that?
Yeah, the findings were very interesting, Pablo. The first thing is that there was some heterogeneity between the two cities. Just to give you the context, the PM2.5 levels in Chennai are much lower than in Delhi. The average PM2.5 levels in Chennai are around 40, and in Delhi it's around 100. So in terms of the relationship, in Chennai, there was a steeper relationship with total cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and HDL cholesterol, whereas it was a sigmoid shape in Delhi. That means that there was a plateauing after a certain point of time. So one might argue, why is this? The exact reason is not really known. We also know from data from the high-income countries, particularly US and Europe, where the pollution levels are extremely low, but there's a strong relationship to PM2.5 and many of the cardiovascular risk factors, even at levels of 20, 25 or so. So at lower levels, the relationships are steeper and stronger, but as you go along, it becomes flat. And the reason is many people would have died, I suppose, because of the higher levels. And whatever the risk that is ascribed to a particular risk factor would have occurred at lower levels. And so incremental value of that risk is going to be lower as we go higher.
I think that's interesting. I mean, from an epidemiological perspective, about the importance of doing research in settings with different exposure. And also, I think another thing is that we tend to group low-income countries or even India. And you can, in your study, it's a good example. I mean, Chennai and Delhi, they're quite different, and the advantage of doing studies in different cities. But just in relation, because it was implicit in your answer, but basically the relation with LDL, that is one of the main driver of cardiovascular disease. So you found a strong association between air pollution in both cities. Is that the case?
It is. We found an association, I would say, in both cities, but much steeper and stronger association in Chennai as compared to Delhi, which is counterintuitive because you have very high levels of PM2.5, but not really that counterintuitive as you might think, because a lot of data coming from the Western populations where the levels of pollution are much lower, the relationships are stronger. So at lower levels, it is strong. But I think after it reaches a certain level, it starts plateauing, because whatever the adverse effects of that high levels of pollution that happens at a lower level, and it gets plateaued off as we go higher.
And has been any other research similar to yours? Or is this the first study, at least in India, looking in such a detail to this association?
In India, a large number of studies have been cross-sectional. There are a lot of cross-sectional studies, interrupted time series studies, clinical studies, and so on. But this is the first time we are getting longitudinal data, because longitudinal data are more robust. We are getting incident hypertriglyceridemia or incident hypertension, incident diabetes. So in that sense, it's unique and novel.
And in terms of next steps and future research, what would you say there are priorities or your group is planning to do?
So we have done multiple things. One is relating them to the risk factors. Second is moving beyond the cities of Delhi and Chennai and actually looking at the whole country. In fact, we have developed a model for the whole country, so for various cities across India, including rural areas. And that is on our dashboard, and anybody can use that data to relate it to any of the studies they're doing. The second is, as somebody said, cardiovascular disease is a disease that starts in the womb and ends in the tomb. So you require a life course approach. And so we have brought together seven different cohorts, the birth cohorts, adolescent cohorts, adult cohorts, elderly cohorts, amongst others. And so we are looking at various cardiovascular outcomes at every point in time. For example, in pregnant women, we are looking at gestational diabetes. Then we are looking at birth outcomes, because we know now that low birth weight is related to future cardiovascular disease. Then we are looking at cognitive function in children. We now know that poor cognitive function means they are going to not have great jobs. They are going to be in lower socioeconomic status. And we now know how lower socioeconomic status and low levels of education is related to cardiovascular disease. Then at adolescent, we are looking at insulin resistance. Amongst adults, we are looking at several of the cardiovascular risk factors. Amongst elderly population, we are looking at vascular dementia, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. So clearly, across the lifespan, we are looking at multiple levels. The second thing is, not only is PM2.5 important, there are other air pollutants which are not being studied, such as nitric oxide, sulfur dioxide, temperature, ozone, among others. So we have been funded to look at nitric oxide, ozone, temperature. In fact, we have created a temperature model, and we are looking at hot spots and how acutely it can increase mortality during that high levels of temperatures. That's also being done at a national level. Lastly, I would like to, because I am here in Geneva, Juan Goethe, the German philosopher, had an association with Geneva. I believe he visited, and there's a park in his name here. He said that knowing is not enough. We must be willing. Willing is not enough. We must act. So we have this knowledge, but we should do some mitigating work, and we are working in that area.
I was going to ask, I mean, that's a nice, I mean, my final question regarding your paper was going to be, okay, I mean, first, it's quite impressive as usual. I mean, all the research you are doing, and definitely we're going to be following up that, what we can do. So acting, I know you're a man of action. So even if we still have research questions, what do you think are the main policy recommendations? I mean, and let's talk about India, maybe your country.
So one is at a policy level, how do we reduce air pollution? What are the policy options that we have in terms of reducing air pollution? So we have to act on polluting industries. We need to go to the clean fuels, for example. We need to reduce transport-related air pollution. We need to modify construction activities so that air pollution becomes less. We need behavioral changes amongst farmers. So there are multiple policy issues. But also for patients who already have disease, it's very important. They die during high air pollution days. So we are evaluating low-cost air purifiers in a randomized controlled trial to see whether we can improve quality of life in such individuals.
Okay. To finish, Prabhakar, we always ask all our guests to share, what is your understanding by global cardiovascular research? So in your own words, what, I mean, as one of the global cardiovascular researchers, what do you understand by that?
So when what I understand by global cardiovascular research is we are living in an interlinked world. There is something called the black swan moment. What happens in the northern hemisphere can impact climate changes in the southern hemisphere. Similarly, because we are living in an interlinked world, you know, diet can become uniform or can change depending on trade pacts. Just to give you an example, Brazil, for example, grows a lot of oranges, a lot of fruits, exports it to US and imports. What does it import? It imports processed food. So clearly you see the thing, US is getting a better diet and Brazil is getting it. So these kind of interactions, these kind of global influences is actually fueling the cardiovascular disease epidemic. And so we need to think at a high level, and that's why you need global health research.
Thank you, Prabhakar. It has been a real pleasure to have you on the Global Heart Podcast today. I hope you enjoy the rest of the summit in Geneva. Our listeners can find the link to the paper in the podcast description. And it has been, I mean, a great episode linking, I mean, the World Heart Report on air pollution that we hear earlier. And one of the key things was the need of more research in low and middle income countries. So we have a brilliant example by Prabhakar and his team on this excellent research in India and its implication. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pablo. Thank you very much.